Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening, and I tell you what, welcome to December 1st, 2019. Can you believe December already? It's beginning to look a lot like, it just seems like unbelievable that we are here already, but I am just looking out over the beautiful skyline of the most beautiful city in the country, Houston, Texas. And we had a perfect day today. The weather here is just perfect. I'm glad it's not snowing. I'm glad I'm down here in the somewhat warmth, and it was just a great day. Welcome to Breaking the Silence tonight, and we're just going to have an unbelievable show. I've been looking forward to this one ever since I met this young lady, and this is just going to be phenomenal. I do want to kind of give you a fair warning up front that if you have young children listening to the show, we won't be obscene or offensive whatsoever, but it's going to be about some very sensitive topics. So I just want to warn you parents that if you do have some children listening, you may want to be selective, and we'll try to keep it. But the topic tonight is very serious, so it's going to go very deep. So just want to kind of warn you on that. A couple things before we get going. Just some announcements and letting everybody know what's going to happen in 2 days, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, this time Tuesday night. Put whatever you normally watch on TV on the DVR. Tape it. You can do that. No big deal. But join us live right here for Hope for the Holidays. It's going to be a special hour-long live video feed around the world. And just looking forward to several special guests calling in. You're going to get to watch them too. You're going to be right here in the house, and we're right here in front of the grand piano. You'll get to look over the horizon and the landscape of what I'm seeing each night here. And we're going to just kind of let you in inside my mind of how to get through the stress, the anxiety, the pains, the hurts, the disappointments, the depressions, that rush of emotions that happens during the holiday seasons. Just went through this with Thanksgiving. So I understand, and I've been on the phone and on the emails and texting a lot of people that have some problems during these times of the year. So we're just going to spend an hour Tuesday night, live video, and this is the best way. I just talked to Douglas, our producer, and he said this is the best way for everybody just to log on and to watch it. So let's go ahead and write this down. It's simple. Facebook.com/ BBS Radio. If you do Facebook.com/ BBS Radio, BBS, Boy Sam Radio, it's going to get you right there. You can hit it. And you can forward it to people. They can get the link. So the next couple of days, just send that out to everybody that you know. And we'll get that out and have a great time. We're going to have some very special people that's going to be calling in. I'm hoping we have a good lineup. But we're just going to share with you some wonderful information. So tell your friends, your neighbors, your family to how to be able to get hope for the holidays this Tuesday night, December 3rd, 8 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time. So looking forward to that. We're still running the little contest of where you can actually get online, and my son Curtis is running this for me. So it's because I don't have sense enough to know how to turn my computer on. So he takes care of all the technical stuff for me. But we just ask that you just go on and like and share the post that Curtis just put up on Facebook and Instagram. Forward and like those posts. If you want to join my groups, you're welcome to do that also. But do those two things, and that's going to get you into the contest. That's, we're going to be giving away some new books, and the books are going to be coming out. Now, don't expect them by Christmas because the book's not even published yet. But when the Overcoming the Darkness, the Roadmap to Hope comes out, you're going to be on the top of the list. When that book, that box opens, the first crate of books that comes to my home, I will sign several of those and will mail those out to you. So simply get on, like, and share the post on Facebook or Instagram, and that will get you in the contest. So looking forward to that. I want to share with you a couple things before we have our guest on tonight, because she's going to be the whole hour, but just a couple things just real quick. I always like to just give you a couple things to jot down to kind of help. I've always said from day one with this program that if you invest in the time to listen in, we're going to try to invest in something back into you that will be able to help you through this next week. So I jotted a few things down just while ago sitting in my recliner, and I want to just pass those on to you. A couple things. For finding strength to get through the hard days, to get through those hard times. So if you just find yourself hitting a wall right now, and it's a brick wall, you can't crawl over it and you can't pile through it and you can't dig underneath it, what do you do? Here's a few things I just want you to remember and try to set inside your mind. I want to kind of let you know, number one, you are not what happened to you in the past. And I think our guest tonight is going to be able to affirm most of these, because when you go through trauma like she has and like I have in life, you understand that your past is not who you are anymore. You're not what happened to you in the past. You are only what you do right now in this moment. Number two, focus on what you have and not what you don't have. So many times we focus on what we're missing instead of what we're blessed with right in our lap. Number three, give yourself permission to fall apart for a little while every now and then. It's okay. You don't always have to pretend that you're the most strongest human being alive and that everything's fine. You don't have to constantly try to prove that everything's just going fantastic. Every now and then, cry if you need to. It's healthy to shed a few tears. The sooner you do, the sooner you're going to be able to smile again and face those problems head on. If you have resentment in your heart for somebody else that they've done to you, that they've hurt you, I want to let you know, resentment hurts you, not them. Try to do whatever you can to forgive people and move on, even if they've never even asked you to forgive them. But don't do it for them. Do it for you. Grudges, resentment are always a waste of happiness. Get that unnecessary stress out of your life right now, tonight. Remember, resentment hurts you, not them. A couple more real quick. When you're in a dark place, when you're in a dark time, when you're down, that's the time not to close the door and keep people out. That's the time to let other people in. No, there won't be always be able to pull you out of the dark places once you're in there, but the light that spills in when another person enters in will at least show you which way the door is. Don't ever just stay alone in the darkness. Always try to invite somebody else in and share what's going on in your life, in your mind, in your world with them. And the last one, the end right now of whatever just happened, whatever you've gone through, the end is a new beginning for you. The past, you can just say thank you for all those life lessons past that you taught me. Future, now I'm ready for you, because the great beginning always occurs at the point you thought would be the end of everything. A great beginning always occurs at the very point you thought would be the end of everything. There is a future. Hang on to that. Just a few things I want to throw at you that while I'm sitting in my recliner and trying to get through a tough day or a tough night, a tough time, that I had to remind myself. So we want you to jot down our phone number, 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And I promise Douglas is going to answer the phone and be as nice as possible to you. And it'll get you right on the program as quick as we can. So if you have a question or a comment, and especially tonight, if you have somebody that is in the situation that our guest was in tonight, we want to hear from you. And we're going to give you some resources, and we're going to give you ability to be able to contact me or Kathy to be able to try to get some help. Kathy McGibbon is a wife, a mother, an author, and a playwright who has overcome the horrific dark world of sex trafficking. After many years of silence, and we've talked about this, that's why this show is called Breaking the Silence. After many years of living in silence, Kathy finally decided to journal what happened to her. And we're going to talk about this in great detail tonight. What happened to her as a way of dealing with what was going on and that experience that she just went through. The journal eventually became a book. The book eventually became a stage play. And now she is leading a movement against human trafficking, partnering with several nonprofit organizations. She raises awareness, fights for those who have been trafficked, and mentor those who have overcome it. And she is a voice just to inspire others to join in the fight against such an unbelievable, unbelievable atrocity. Kathy McGibbon from Houston, Texas, I want to welcome you this evening to Breaking the Silence. Are you there, Kathy?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Kathy, it's just a joy. I'm thrilled. I've been looking forward to this ever since I was sitting next to you at a panel in front of all the Baylor College of Medicine residents and fellows the other night. And when I shared my story and you shared your story and we were kind of just blessing each other with what was going on, and it just absolutely astounded me. And I immediately, when it was over, said, I have to have you share this story on our show. You doing okay this evening?
I am over the Thanksgiving holidays and getting ready for Christmas. So
there you go. Well, Kathy, you live here in Houston, right?
I do. Yes.
Okay. I told some people this morning that this happens right in our hometown. This happens in hometowns all around this country and around the world. And I want everybody to hear your story, Kathy. And this is one of the first guests. I have not one question to ask you. We're just going to jump into the story, and I want you just to share, and then we'll just see where that goes tonight. First of all, if there was anything in the introduction that I missed, feel free to fill that in. But I wanted just to let you have some time. I'm just going to hush up, and everybody's probably out there going, I wish you hurry up and do that. Just going to have you start telling the story and take it slow. And we're just going to fill in what's going on, and we'll take a couple breaks. But I'm just going to jump in when the jumping in gets good. But share with us what happened to you and when this happened, and then we'll talk back and forth, Kathy.
Sure. Thank you so much. I like to start my story by sharing my childhood, just because a lot of what people understand or a lot of people think sex trafficking or human trafficking looks a certain way. And so I like to share my background just to kind of come against the typical stereotypes of what you may think sex trafficking looks like. Okay. I was born in Canada. I was raised by my mother. I was raised in a single parent household, but my earliest memories of my father were absolutely amazing. I can't say anything bad about him. You know, grown up stuff happens and relationships, you know, fall apart, unfortunately. And so, I was raised by my mother, and she did everything in her power to fill the void, any void that she thought we had as far as missing my dad. And so I had a really great childhood. I really did. My mother was hardworking, and she loved us very, very much. And so I didn't think that I had any daddy issues. I didn't think that I had any absent father issues because my mom did such a great job. And we were surrounded by loving family, my grandparents and my aunts and uncles and cousins. And so I didn't know, you know, I knew that he was absent, but I didn't think it affected me. Fast forward, and one summer my mother decides to move to Houston. Actually, she presented it as a vacation. She said that we're going on summer vacation. She just needed a change, and we have some folks in Texas. My aunt lived in Texas, and we were going to go visit. And I always tell people that this is the longest summer vacation ever because we never went back. My mom decided to stay. she loved it that much, and so we never went back. Yeah, I love it now, but at first it was a culture shock. Like, it was just, you know, I left Canada playing with Barbie dolls and Cabbage Patch Kids. I had a whole collection. And here, you know, when I got to Texas, they say everything is bigger in Texans, and that's including the expectations. As far as what I experienced, it was just a very, very, very surreal experience for me because I had to grow up really, really quickly. So kids in Canada, when I left, were playing with dolls, like I said, and competitions and stuff didn't look like they did here. In Texas, kids were dating, and they, you know, it was a competition to be the most popular, or the most well-dressed, and the most everything. And so it was just a very different atmosphere for me. So what I did was I found my niche basically diving into what I knew. I was raised in church, and so my high school years kind of looked like me going to church after school when I wasn't in school. And I love to serve the community. I love people. And I just, you know, I found my niche with ROTC, and I just got really involved in community service. And I made it through high school. Again, I had my regular teenage insecurities, but nothing that was, you know, nothing that was a red flag. Nothing that was, oh my gosh, you're going to be a target of this when you graduate, or you're going to be, you know, you're going to fall into this ditch when you graduate. It was just, it was great. You know, I had high grades and graduated, and it was good.
Wonderful.
It was. And so when I graduated though, I took about a year or so to dive into work. And then I finally got back into school again. Again, I was raised by a single parent. So, I did what I had to do. And got into school my first year of college, and it was like a tech school thing. I was in college, and I was going to tech school, and I was working. So it was a busy, busy, busy time for me. And I was always in the books, and I was always at home. Well, one day in school, a mutual friend, she came back, one of my best friends at the time, and she was like, oh, my goodness, I met these guys, and they were absolutely amazing. My friend was a singer. And so there was a huge talent show in Houston by like a national company that came, and they were scouting for all these, you know, creative voices and stuff like that. And she happened to attend. And so when she came back from it, she was just so excited. She was excited, number one, because of the experience, but then she was really, really excited because she met these really cool guys. It was another band that was a part of the competition, a part of the talent show. And she said that she just bonded with them, and they just were hilarious, and they were just so great to be around. And they invited us, us being her friends, so they extended the invitation to her, like, hey, bring your friends And, you know, we do concerts and stuff, and we'd love for you guys to come out and hang out with us at our next concert. And so she came back with that invitation, and we were really all excited. I didn't have much of a life outside of school and work, just because I had priorities. And so, and my mom, you know, like I tell people, when I was in school, my mom wasn't the type of person where you go get good grades and then she gives you incentives. Like, you get an A and you're doing great, and so you get to go to this party or hang out. No, my mom was just like, hey, no, you just get good grades and that's it, right? She's Jamaican, so I don't know what you guys know about Jamaicans, but they're right. Very strict. So, and she was single, so she was overprotective, naturally, right, and understandably. But she, when my friend came back with this proposal, it sounded great. It was like, okay, this is something new and something exciting. And so we all, like, plotted. I remember that first night. We all plotted because we were going to night school as well. So it was very easy for us to slip away from our parents. Mind you, I was a young adult, but I was still living with my mom. And so my mom had her rules. So I couldn't just disappear and expect to have a place to sleep. I was raised very respectful. And, you know, I had a very good relationship with my mother. And so this was very out of the ordinary for me. This is very spontaneous.
And, okay, so at this point, Kathy, you are going to school, you're working, you got a job mm-hmm. or two, everything's going fine. Yeah. Most of the time you're at home studying, and one of your friends said, hey, I found this group. We're going to go and listen to them and kind of hang out with them, and that's kind of where we're at right now. So what age are you right at this point, Kathy?
Probably 20. I think I just hit 20.
Fantastic. Okay, so what we're going to do? Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. Come back, and then we're going to go 20 more minutes, just full force here. So when we come back, we're going to find out what happens after you go to the concert and after you start buddying up with the people in the band. So stay with us. You will not want to miss the rest of this story from Kathy. Keep joining us right here on Breaking the Silence as we go to this commercial break. Brought to you by Breaking the Silence. Don't miss this worldwide live video web event, Hope for the Holidays with Dr. Gregory Williams, on Tuesday evening, December 3rd at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. You know, holidays can be so stressful. It can really bring some traumatic emotions to so many people. This program is going to give you so much information, ideas, and coping skills on how to survive the stress of the holidays. So join me, Greg Williams, and a few very special guests for this worldwide live video event on Tuesday, December 3rd from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time right here on BBS Radio Network. All right, fantastic. We just want to make sure that you join us Tuesday night. And don't forget to jump on right now to the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page and Shattered by the Darkness Instagram page, and like those and forward those, share those, and it'll get you into the contest. We are right in the middle of hearing Kathy McGibbon's story. So, Kathy, we're just going to turn it right back over to you. So you're just now in school and getting ready to, your friend came over and said, hey, we got this neat band that I want you to hear. So go ahead, Kathy.
Yeah, so we accepted the invitation that my friend came back with, and we went to this really cool party with this really cool band, this group of guys, and we had a blast. Like, honestly, it was like the best young adult experience I had ever had. We laughed all night. You know, we got into like this club, this VIP club, never been to like the VIP section of a club and all that kind of stuff. And we got in and it was free and it was just a fun, entertaining night. And so from that night, we just gained momentum. We just started hanging out with these guys.
This was a drug, alcohol, that kind of party. This is just to get together a good time. You were just going to listen to some music.
Absolutely. There was alcohol because it was a club, but there was no forced alcohol drinking. There was no, you know, because we all had to get home, right? So we were very careful about what we did while we were out.
Absolutely.
So, no, this wasn't a forced, you know, like, do drugs, and we weren't getting together and doing drugs and all that kind of stuff. If we had alcohol, it was limited. It was sneaking a sip or two or a cup or two, but it wasn't, like, obsessive. It wasn't it wasn't any of that. It was just a really fun young adult kind of experience. And we did. We hung out, and then we just kept hanging out. And a lot of times, there was no alcohol involved. I remember one time, one night that we went out, it was we drove up to Galveston, and we were just having fun. It was just laughing and playing around like big kids. And so we really thought that these guys were friends, right? Yeah. We really began to like build a bond with these individuals. And then, you know, not long after that, I would say about 6 months of partying and hanging out, not long after that, I started to receive invitations kept coming, but they started to look a little different. So the invitations started being extended only to me. So it was no longer, hey guys, hey, you know, you guys come hang out with us. It was, hey Kathy, why don't you come hang out with me? That person that was extending the invitation happened to be the leader of this band, of this guy band, and he was the one that called all the shots. Very evident that he was the one that called the shots. He was the genius, he was the brains of the group, and the most creative, and he was the one that kind of like the glue of that of that band. And so I'll call him Mr. Charming, or I'll call him Romeo. I'm sorry. I'll call him Romeo just because he was that type of person. Romeo was very suave, and so when he started extending invitations to me, you know, I was flattered. And I accepted it, you know. I was like, oh my goodness, this person is interested in me. Now, something that's key is when I told you that I was raised by my mother, I didn't know that I had any deep insecurities. Well, when he started giving me all the affirmations, it made me feel really good. Affirmations that I never knew that I wanted. So I didn't think that I had insecurities on that level until he started feeding into those insecurities by telling me how beautiful I was, right? He was telling me how beautiful I was. He was telling me how smart I was. I never knew that I needed those things until he started telling me that, telling me how valuable I was and how different I was from my other friends. And so I started hanging out with this individual, and before long, he had successfully alienated me from my mother. I was getting into arguments with her that I couldn't even tell you why. I remember just disliking her. Like, he was very manipulative, and he was very successful in planting seeds of deceit. And so I didn't want to be around my mother. I didn't want to be around my friends because he would come back and tell me lies. You know, they talk about you behind your back, and you're so different from them. And, you know, they said this about you. And just, he was very crafty. And I started to believe him because I started to actually fall what I thought was in love with this person.
Right.
And so he just became my whole world. And I really thought that I was in a dating relationship with him. I use those words very carefully because I was never dating him, but I thought I was in a dating relationship with him. I thought that we were in a relationship. Right. He was never with me, but I was with him. And
I'm
so
with you. Okay.
And so it was this whole facade of being in love. And this happened, this carried on for about a year. Like I said, I was completely isolated. He successfully ruined the friendships that I had, many of the friendships that I had, and the friendships that were left. There was a certain individual in the girl group that kind of stuck around and hung with me, but it's because she was also being manipulated by a member of the band herself. And so it was very toxic. And about a year into it, he finally said, hey, you know, I really value you. I really want you to be a part of what I'm building. And I'm building, you know, I'm creating this record label. And I want you to be a part of it because I need you with me. Well, as a young adult that thinks that she's in love, what do you think that sounds like? This sounds like next level, right? This sounds like, oh my goodness, this is my future. This guy, you know, pretty much, it sounded like he pulled out a ring. That's what I was hearing, you know? It sounded like my future was in this individual. And so when he came to me and he said that I'm going to build my record label and I really need you to be a part of it. I really want you to be a part of it. I can't do this without you. I was hesitant at first just because he said that the opportunity was in Dallas. And I had never, even though I was so caught up and just doing things that, you know, was out of my character, missing church and lying and all this kind of stuff. To leave Houston to go to Dallas was like a really big step for me because I just never did that anything like that before. So I was hesitant at first, but he was very persuasive, and he promised me that if we went to Dallas, it would only be for 3 months, and that we would come back with, you know, $500,000. Richer, and we'd have a great future, and we'd start building here in Houston, building our lives here in Houston. And so finally I went. I agreed to go. And the only person that really knew the truth, somewhat of the truth, was the girl that I said, one of my friends that I said was, you know, also being lured into it by his brother at that time, which was another band member. And she, you know, he didn't propose that she came out there, but, she was so caught up in the, oh my gosh, I love this lifestyle, that she was kind of like my go-to person, kind of the person that I would trust. And she was being manipulated as well. So she couldn't tell the truth. And so, I told her, you know, kind of what I was doing. I was going to this job, and I lied to everyone else and told them that I had this contract job. I lied to my family, and at that time I was staying with my friend's father, and he was, you know, he was looking after me because I had left my mother's house because this individual, Romeo, had successfully created a divide between me and my mother. So I went to stay with my friend and her father, and loved him so much, but I lied to him, you know. I lied to him and told him that I had this great opportunity with a contract job in Dallas, and I'd be back, knowing that I was leaving with this guy that asked me to help him with his record label. Right. Well, the night that I was supposed to leave, just I had this really bad, sick feeling, but I couldn't shake it, and I just thought that I was just nervous because I'd never done anything like this. It was a big thing for me, you know. To do, and I just thought I was just nervous, and now I know that that was literally something telling me not to go, because the moment that I arrived in Dallas, I remember getting out of the car and walking through a hotel room, and that's when I saw that, okay, I'm in big trouble here, because when I walked into the hotel room, there were other guys and other girls that I didn't know, and no one looked happy. And this Mr. Romeo was so, he was no longer Romeo. Romeo turned into a monster. Romeo was violent. Romeo immediately started belittling me. And he had one of his, there was another young lady there, and he had her, you know, pretty much take me to the room and start telling me rules. You know, this is what you're here for, and this is what you're going to do. It was like an out-of-body experience. It happened so quickly. There was no, like, gradual, you know, it took him a year to groom me, right? So I guess at that time it was like no more time for games. It was just as soon as I got to Dallas, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. And it just happened so fast. The girl that he had, you know, kind of prepping me, she told me that I would have to change into this lingerie that she had, and they just started taking pictures of me. And before I knew it, there were men coming to the room to violate me.
Oh, this is the first night that you're in Dallas.
This is the second night. The first night they took the pictures.
Okay.
The first night they took
pictures. So you didn't even have a chance to feel like you were going out to eat, were excited about this new business venture, were. You know, it just was automatically, it turned into this.
It was automatic.
Wow. Go ahead. Okay.
It was automatic. And so the very next day, that's when men, strangers started coming into the room, and I was told, hey, just do what they want, do what they say, give them what they want, and everything will be just fine. And I did, and it was just, it was like a blur. It was just happening so fast, so quickly. Wow. And so we did this for a while, and then, you know, he was violated. He would, you know, come in and say, hey, the only reason I'm doing this, still he had me, right? Still he was coming in to me and saying, hey, the only reason why I'm doing this with you is because I have to make everyone else feel, you know, I have to control everyone else. But it's, remember, it's just me and you. So still he had this kind of mm-hmm. I love you type mentality towards me. I'm protecting you. We're a team. He made it feel like we were a team. And it was very sick. It was a very sick game. And so even with that, even with him having men come to the room for sex and violate my body in ways that I could never imagine, I still felt, okay, well, at least he cares. And primarily because mm-hmm. he told me that, you know, there were other girls there that would just disappear, and I knew that he talks about them going on the street. But he told me that he would never put me on the street. He was like, oh, no, I would never do that to you, because remember, this is our game. This is what we do. This is between me and you. And so I was like, okay, well, at least he cares about me a little bit, you know? At least he's not mm-hmm. going to put me on the street. Well, that time came where he said that we were not making enough money. Me and the other girls were not making enough money, and we needed to be on the street. And literally, I remember getting ready for that first night, and I couldn't even look myself in the mirror. There was another young lady that I had to put my makeup on. They told me what to wear. I just couldn't believe it. And I didn't believe it until literally he dropped me off in the middle of, like, downtown Arlington or Dallas. I don't even know where. And he told me, he looked me in the face, and he said, okay, go get the money. I need you to go to make my money, and I'll pick you back up. You know, meet me back here at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., or something like that. So that was about 10:30 at night, and he was telling me that I was going to be out there till 6 a.m.
Did you have a goal of how much money you were supposed to make in a night?
There was a quota that he gave to everyone else. I don't remember what mine was, honestly. I think he just said, bring me as much money back as possible. Because that first night, I think, was just a test of him, you know, just testing me and seeing how I would do out there. And I remember that's when I literally was like, okay, I'm going to die. This is it. Like, this, I'm going to die out here. I'm never going home. And it became very real to me, because just roaming the streets in an unfamiliar place. Yes, you know, Houston, Dallas, 4 hours apart, but I had never been to Dallas.
Right.
For that. And I didn't know where I was, and there were people screaming at me, and there were other women out there, and it was just cars pulling up. And so literally it was just me hopping into one car and hopping out of the next. And it was just a cycle that would not end for that first night. And I remember getting in the car that first night, and the morning when he came for me, and handing him just like this wad of money. Honestly, that I don't even know how I got. I just know I was completely numb. I felt like less than a person. I felt like trash, because you basically give yourself over to what I call wolves. You give mm-hmm. yourself over to these wolves in the street, these buyers, and you just, you know, you're just like, okay, whatever you want to do to me, do it. And you hope that you get paid for it. And I remember handing him over money, and he's like, good job. And then he counted the money, and he just bust out laughing. He was like, this is it? This is all you made? Well, you'll definitely do better tomorrow night. And I think that was worse than anything. That was like, that crushed me, because here I was. That night included me running from people. I remember picking up a bottle as I was sitting in a car and trying to get out of the car because this individual was strangling me. I just remember so much trauma, so much of what I had to go through just to be laughed at. And, you know, he just kept putting me out there. And a lot of people would say, mm-hmm. you know, well, why didn't you run? And why didn't you just leave? Well, you know, he took that year that I talked about in Houston to groom me. The grooming process is literally breaking down of your identity. It's literally breaking down who you are. And so mentally and emotionally, I wasn't even fit to run. He was very violent, and so he did threaten that if I, you know, if I left, there would be some consequences. And when you're in that state, you just don't know. And so I felt stuck. I felt stuck. And what was supposed to be 3 months of this turned into actually 9 months. Literally, day in, day out. A lot of people, you know, they'll ask the question, well, how many people do you think you saw, or how many men did you encounter a night or a day? Because he would put us out there, you know, in the afternoon I was out there, in the nighttime I was out there. There was house calls that I had. There were people coming to the room. It was just so much. It was so much. And I think that a lot of it I blurred out. So when I'm asked, like, well, about how many? Maybe 15 to 30, but honestly, I couldn't tell you an honest answer. I couldn't tell you a fact, like this is exactly what I saw, because how many men I encountered, because it was just like a blur to me.
And you mean an evening or a day, 15 to 30?
A day, yeah.
Wow.
A day, I would say about 15 to 30, but I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly how many, because there was a time when you just try to blank it out. You just try to go numb, and you turn off your brain, and you just kind of let your body be your body, and it's disconnected from your spirit, and it's disconnected from your mind, in order to survive.
Wow.
In order to survive. Because I honestly think that if I was to remember, I remember a lot of things that will come to me in nightmares, and I remember a lot of things that will come to me in triggers, like if I smell a certain scent, or if I see a certain hotel or a certain place, or hear a voice that is very familiar or sounds familiar to me, it'll trigger me. But
yeah,
if I was to sit down and literally think of everything that I went through in those streets, I don't think that I would be able to articulate that. I think that I would be dead. I don't think that I'd be able to survive telling that story because
okay,
of the
well,
trauma.
Well, Kathy, we're going to catch the last chapter of this story and how you got out of this on the other side of this break. Continue listening to Breaking the Silence with Kathy McGibbon tonight and as our special guest. And we're going to take our last commercial break as we come back to hear the rest of her unbelievable story. Brought to you by Breaking the Silence. Don't miss this worldwide live video web event, Hope for the Holidays with Dr. Gregory Williams, on Tuesday evening, December 3rd at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. You know, holidays can be so stressful. It can really bring some traumatic emotions to so many people. This program is going to give you so much information, ideas and coping skills on how to survive the stress of the holidays. So join me, Greg Williams, and a few very special guests for this worldwide live video event on Tuesday, December 3rd from 8 to 9 p.m. Central Time right here on BBS Radio Network. That will be Tuesday evening at 8 o'clock Central Time all around the world, and you can find that program. The best and the easiest way to do that would be facebook.com/BBS Radio, facebook.com/BBS Radio. And then also we'd like for you to get on the Shattered by the Darkness website and Facebook page and Instagram page and like and share those posts that Curtis put up there this evening, and that'll get you in the drawing for the Overcoming the Darkness book. And Kathy, you as you complete this story, which I knew an hour wasn't going to be long enough, but you wrote a book about this, right? And is that still available? How can people get, if they want to hear this story and read about this story in the full completeness of a book. How do they go about doing that?
It's available. The book is called The Unspoken Revealed, Destined, the Unspoken Revealed by Kathy McGibbon.
Okay, it's called Destined, the Unspoken Revealed?
The Unspoken Revealed, yes.
The Unspoken Revealed. And can you get that on Amazon? And
yes, you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available via Kindle or a hard copy. But it's out there, and it is my journal. So it's a book, but I call it my journal.
Yeah. Okay. And, yeah, I encourage everybody to get in there and get that. And especially if you know somebody that, if you have teenage daughters, this may be a good book. Not to glorify it, but to be a warning of what can happen in a split second. So go ahead, Kathy, and you're in Dallas, and this is happening to you day in, day out. Was this 7 days a week?
Oh, yes. This was 7 days a week. I don't remember a day off.
Wow.
I don't remember that at all. I remember sleeping, eating, going. And so it was, but there was a day, one day there, you know, I became very, I had this unusual bond with what we would call the bottom girl, which is the individual that trained me in the first place on how to dress and how to act. She would come and talk to me when he wasn't around, and she would tell me her stories on how she wanted to really get out. Now, this is very unusual for a bottom girl, because the bottom girls usually have the traffickers back. They have the pimps back, and they don't betray them, and they're very loyal. So for her to be talking to me when he wasn't around, I felt it was just literally God, right? And mm-hmm. She would tell me stories on how she was first tried. She had been out there since she was 11, not with him, but Romeo was the person that kind of saved her, right? And so she felt protected with him, not knowing that her cycle of abuse was just continuing. And so she was really ready to escape and be free and become a singer and all this kind of stuff. But she did have some, because of her trauma, her past trauma, she really had a history of mental illness that I didn't even know about, really. I just thought that this was just a weird bond. Mm-hmm. And so one day she had like what I call like a mental breakdown. And to the point where he couldn't handle her, she just started really, if you know anyone that has ever had an episode,
yes.
It's very hard to control those individuals, you know, in whatever way they're expressing their cry for help. And he couldn't handle her, and he was going to, you know, he was going to have her committed into a hospital in Dallas, but I convinced him that we needed to bring her back to Houston because that's where her medicine was. That's where her doctors were. And so, you know, like we needed to bring her back, and he actually went for it. And that is so unheard of. Right. But the reason why he did was because they had a child together. And so if he didn't, you know, the natural thing to do was to beat her up literally and just leave her. Any other girl, he would have just done that, right, and just abandoned her. But he couldn't do this. He couldn't do that with this individual because they had a child together. And so when we got back to Houston, we got her secure, and then my trauma started manifesting in ways that he couldn't handle. I remember we were in a hotel room, and the plan all along was to get her safe, and then we were going to get back to Dallas to continue working. But I literally started having my own episode, and I was actually able to call my brother and my sister-in-law to help me, and so they came and got me. Obviously, the book goes into detail on how that actually happened, because that really doesn't happen. It's unheard of, but I literally just say that it's the grace of God, because there's no other way that this pimp, this evil person, would allow me to even call for help.
And had there been any contact with family at all since you had went for Dallas that first time, or was it complete out of, you just didn't have any contact? What was that?
No contact whatsoever. No contact
at
whatsoever.
All.
Yeah. And even before Dallas, yeah. Even before, it was just my brother and I weren't, you know, it's an older brother, so we didn't talk every day. So it was just weird that I would even choose him to call in the first place. So they, you know, my brother came and picked me up, and his wife, my sister-in-law, and they didn't ask any questions. They just thought that I was probably in a bad situation with a boyfriend, but they didn't there's no way that they could have known that I would have, you know, I was out there on the streets and I was trafficked. So I just never looked back. I would like to say, I'm sorry, I never went back. I would like to say that I never looked back, but I did because of the trauma. He did try to contact me several times and try to prey on my emotions. And I even considered it because by then I was just broken down, didn't know who I was. And I was just broken. I was literally just broken because he had successfully tore me down to the point of where my identity was compromised. But never went back. And I just kind of dove back into what I knew best, which is church and serving people and writing this journal that came into, you know, that grew into this book and then it grew into this stage play. And I started sharing my story with individuals just on a one-on-one basis. And I started realizing that, oh my God, this happened to other people, because people would literally contact me like, oh my God, you just changed my life, because I thought that I was alone. And so the more I started sharing, the more I started realizing that it was helping people, and that helping people was helping me. And
absolutely.
So that's what I do. And, you know, and now obviously I work for a nonprofit fighting sex trafficking. I work for Street Grace, which is fighting the demand. I've been able to partner with wonderful, wonderful organizations and wonderful humans that are actually fighting this thing. And so, I love what you said, how you started your program. I am definitely not my past. I'm definitely not that broken little girl who was confused. I'm so strong now. I'm doing well. I'm married. I have children. I am thriving. I'm a thriving member of this community. And I have literally dedicated my life to helping people come out of this situation and grow beyond what their past is or says they are.
And we have about 5 minutes left. I think with this story and your playwright and your work, you was invited to the White House for a signing of a special bill?
I was invited to witness the FOSTA-SESTA bill be signed into law, and that was the bill that shut down Backpage. If you're familiar with Backpage, it's kind of like a Craigslist for traffickers to sell individuals online. And so that bill holds the tech community the liable for advertising, knowingly advertising humans to be sold by traffickers online. And so it was such an honor. It was such an honor to be standing in the room with other survivors, other overcomers, other people who are saying no to this. That was a very monumental part of my life, like literally moment in my life.
Yeah. Now, just in the couple minutes we have left, Kathy, first of all, as a resident of Houston, how big of a problem is this for us folks that probably drive by these places every day and don't even realize what's going on behind the closed doors? What kind of problem are we looking at? Let's just say in Houston, let alone around the country and around the world, but is it huge here?
Yeah, we like to say, honestly, in the anti-trafficking community, we like to say that this is literally like the next AIDS crisis. Like, it's really, really bad. This is a public health issue. And the reason why I say that is because it's not always going to look like the movie Taken. It's not always going to look like the white van pulling up and snatching you away. Though kidnapping and stuff does happen. Abductions do happen. We take that very seriously. But it also looks like your neighborhood barista who is working in the daytime and then going to the strip clubs at night because her pimp is forcing her to. It also looks like couples who their husbands, their spouses are forcing them into this. It looks like the girl on the cheerleading team in middle school who has been trafficked and now she's recruiting other people. It looks like everyday life. And so it is so hard to, number one, detect. And number two, it's very hard to stop if they're not aware of it. That's why I like to tell people, you know, I encourage people to talk about it. It's hard and it's dark, but if you get the education that you need, then I guarantee you it's not going to be as scary as you think. I am not scared of sex trafficking. I am ready to fight this thing, and I want other people to join me.
Okay, and we're not talking about like, you know, I think a lot of us here in Houston think it's more of an immigrant situation, that, you know, they keep their passports or their papers and then they use that as the ploy. But we're talking about normal. I don't mean that immigrants are normal, but I mean United States citizens that are in school with upper middle class families and just get caught up in this web that absolutely changes their world. How, if you're a parent, and you said you are a parent, how do you, what's some of the signs that you can detect? We just have a couple minutes left. What's some of the signs that could be seen that would kind of throw up a red flag if something shows up in their daughter, or what's just some things to be aware of?
Absolutely. So it's like change in behavior. All of a sudden your child is hanging with this new group of people or this new individual that, you know, she didn't grow up with, you know, you're not familiar with her. Change in what they're wearing. And I want to be clear that this happens to boys as well. So this goes for girls and boys. So, you know, your child has a change of friends, a change in behavior, just erratic behavior, all of a sudden, mood swings, and all of this looks like regular teenage stuff, right? But
yes,
but these are things to look out for. Eye contact is one of the things that victims are trained not to do. Don't look anyone else in the eye except for your pimp. Branding, tattoos that have names of other individuals who or signs or symbols that could be a type of branding from pimps. Excess, like extra phones and money on them, luxurious lifestyle, or the total opposite, not eating, you know, very concerned about their weight and how they're dressing, stuff like that. But there's a lot of signs to look for, a lot of red flags that look like everyday things. And yes, this very much is a domestic problem. It's not just immigration. We have those immigration problems as well, and foster care problems as well. But this is also happening in our schools, churches, communities, you know, and our own home.
Okay. If there's somebody that's listening to the program tonight that wants to talk to you, wants to reach out, wants to get help, in the last minute that we have, how would they do that? And what's a contact for you? And then what if they are right now needing a phone number to call to get help? What would that number be?
So the National Human Trafficking Hotline is, if you're in need of help like right now, that would be the number to call, the National Human Trafficking Hotline. You can also reach me at KathyMcGibbon.com, or you can log on to Street Grace. Street Grace is an organization that is connected to other organizations, and so we're all pretty much working to do this together, and so you can definitely reach me there, StreetGrace.org, KathyMcGibbon.com. National Human Hotline is 888-373-7888. So you can definitely call there if you're in need of help or if you suspect anything. Even if you don't know and if you're not sure, you just want to call in a tip, 888-373-7888.
Okay. Kathy, I want to go ahead and invite you back because I want to get inside your head a little bit of the aftermath, the trauma, how you deal with good days and bad days now, how you stay positive because you seem like a very uppity, positive person, how you do that and what some of the tools that you use to get through that. So I want to invite you back, if you would, towards maybe the first part of the year to have you come back after the holidays and if you would spend another hour with me, I'd love to get inside your brain and dig a little deeper if I could.
Absolutely. I would love to. Thank you.
Kathy, thank you for sharing your story tonight. Kathy McGibbon, McGibbon. You can also find her at streetgrace.org. You can look her name right up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble to get the copy of her book also. Kathy, thanks for joining us tonight. Always want to let you know that no matter what's going on in your life, no matter what's happened to you, no matter what's going on right now, there's always hope. There's always hope, even though it's the darkest time of the night. The sun's just fixing to show up on the other side of that darkness. Just hang on to the hope and never give up. Thank you for joining us tonight, for breaking the silence. Join us Tuesday night, if you would, 8 o'clock for Hope for the Holidays, and just jump on Shattered by the Darkness Facebook and Shattered by the Darkness Instagram for those little contests that we're having there. We want to thank you for joining us tonight. I will see you. Absolutely not just, you won't just hear from me. I will see you Tuesday night, Hope for the Holidays, December 3rd. Join us again for that. And then next week, right here, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1, for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.